This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the first episode of Third Rail. I am Melina Phillips. I am joined with Ginny Ray Sparkman and Lawrence Alexander. First up is to introduce themselves is our lovely Lawrence Alexander.
Peace, friends. Lawrence Alexander, grateful to be a part of the Phillips Collaborative. More than that, grateful to be in this group of very critical friends. It turns out it's a moment that we're actually in dire need of. For the Phillips Collaborative, I serve as a senior consultant. I also do a little bit of work in business development. That means if you're out in these streets, we are too, and we should do business. So let's talk about doing that. I've devoted my career to education, vis-a-vis access to higher education, spent a lot of time doing work in independent and boarding schools and DEI, left to open and start my own consulting practice. And since about 2019, I've been doing DIB-related work related to governance, boards, strategic planning, executive search, as well as some college admissions work. Today, I cool my heels in the Office of Admission at Brown University, serving as the Associate Director of Admissions for College Access Partnerships. But in this moment, I'm really glad to be here with two of my great friends, Melina and Ginny.
Ginny Ray, take it away.
Howdy, y'all. My name is Ginny Ray Sparkman. I use she, her pronouns. I'm excited to be joining Third Rail today as a, both a member of Phillips Collaborative and as someone who has committed their life to seeing the world become a better place. And this opportunity to sit with not only two of the most intellectual, thoughtful, caring people I know, but to be challenged by them, to be able to challenge one another and to sit in these spaces of discomfort is something that I cannot welcome enough. I have a background in education, independent schools, public schools, universities, colleges, high schools, nonprofits in elementary schools and middle schools. I also work with collegiate athletics. And as a coach, I'm an avid reader, and so you should prepare to receive some quotes from books regularly, as well as some recommendations. Something I share with the founder of Phillips Collaborative, who will gladly introduce herself and kick us off now.
Thank you, Ginny. Melina Phillips here, she, her, hers pronouns. I am excited to be here with two really close friends of mine, people who I look to for counsel on a regular basis, whether it be how to hang a 5-foot wreath or how to go about a problem of practice with a head of school. So I am extremely and eternally grateful for them both. I too have a background in education. I taught lower school for most of my career. I love the littles and I was someone who was always looking for ways to gather in affinity spaces. While I taught, I thought that was really important. I love a co-teach model as well. And that's why I never go anywhere without my hitters, Lawrence and Ginny. And I also have a background in university work, college counseling, admissions work, and board work. So risk management, think strategy, think, you know, when the building's burning, who do you call? Me. And I wanted to start, you know, this podcast because I think individually and collectively, all three of us have been having kind of the same circular conversation with the same themes coming up. And so, you know, we wanted to get together and share some of our thought leadership publicly in a format that felt more liberatory than other modes of communicating. So you are going to hear lots about books. You're going to hear lots about probably some comedy from Lawrence. You will hear some cultural references that hopefully some of you will understand. But we're here to be, you know, market disruptors. We are innovators. We are here to be courageous and make change. So I just wanted to, you know, lay the groundwork and kind of ask both of you, why third rail? And more specifically, I want us to speak to the moment. Why now?
You know, Melina, the first time you proposed this podcast, I think what brought me in was the title, Third Rail. And I should probably give everyone a heads up that what you're going to hear in this podcast is just us taking our offline conversations online.
Facts.
and I can't wait to pull out something that Lawrence recently texted us that everyone in the world should hear. But, you know, Melina, you propose this to us, and there's so much context behind the title Third Rail. But specifically, this idea that it's things that people are afraid to touch, that people are afraid to talk about. And I find myself at a loss that so many of these things aren't in conversation. And as a white person living in a society that is constructed around white supremacy, part of maintaining that structure is not having the conversation. And so it allows it to keep functioning. So I would rather show up and have a hard conversation and be a target for someone who's maintaining a system of oppression than I would continue sitting quietly having private conversations that don't empower others to speak up. And so I'm grateful to be here today to try to live that liberatory life. To try to imagine what being an actual abolitionist might look like.
I don't know a more thoughtful reflection on what the third rail is. I don't know a more contemplative thought partner than Jenny Ray. And I have none of that to say. So for those of you who will see this shirt, this is Martin Luther King, lift every voice and swing. I feel like I'm going to say this often. James Baldwin once said, God gave Noah the rainbow sign. No more water. It's the fire next time. Why the third rail? We are living in a moment that is castigating and persecuting all of its truth tellers. I'm 43 years old. I've never seen a society, a culture, or a community prosper as it beheads its truth tellers. Part of the reason that we work out here in these consulting streets is because it's really hard at your day job to have this much spunk. And so we do. We're running out of critical friends. Third Rail and the Collaborative give some critical friends who are interested in construction, not deconstruction. It gives us the opportunity to give you the opportunity, while you have an opportunity, to do the right thing in the name of our next generation of students, leaders, schools, organizations, and spaces. The goal is not to humiliate. The goal is not to intimidate. The goal is to liberate. And so we're here. Third rail is an opportunity before it's the fire next time. And I couldn't be more excited about it.
Oh my goodness. Thank you both. I came up with the name Third Rail years ago, when I started seeing folks in DEI and in schools in particular really shying away from being the truth tellers, to your point, Lawrence, and being shamed, intimidated, for fear of losing their jobs. Into silence, pretty much. And, I think all three of us on this screen and, lots of our friends, because let's be real, most of the people we know are in these spaces constantly, but they grapple with this idea of how to maintain their value proposition while not diluting the work, right? And that's, I feel like this tension, I'd say creative tension, but I feel no creativity coming out of the tension, right? So I feel like Peter Senge's, metaphor won't work here, but how.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
How do you propose that folks working, on the ground balance this idea of a value proposition without diluting the work?
Well, I think it's important if we're talking about the value proposition of the work, the operable systemic work of diversity, equity, inclusion, and in some cases, folks are esteemed enough to be talking about belonging. We have to recognize that we're retrofitting inclusion into exclusive spaces.
Say
Feels
it
like we should
again. Say
just jump into it. Listen, we
it
listen and we do judge.
again. All
Yes,
the
yes.
All of a sudden, diversity, equity, and inclusion has to do this mental, psychological, dialogical, intellectual gymnastics floor routine every time it articulates itself into exhaustion because it's too hard, it's too fast, it's too far. Let's just say it was never in the founding documents. Here's in a world of acronyms, here's one that's helpful. Everybody talks about DEI. No one talks about NTR. Enrollment management folks, hang on. NTR is net tuition revenue. When you, in particular, talk about independent schools, but not just independent schools, so hold on to your vineyard vines, but private higher education institutions, anywhere that is dependent upon its payers to exist, the construction is really the following. Take any domestic independent school, boarding school, but also private higher education institution. In order to exist, you need folks who can pay tuition. If history, if economics, if sociology are any indicators, if wealth maps are any indicators, then most of your domestic full pay folks are white families. You comb as much as you can, the preponderance of your folk are going to be multi-generational, private school, independent school, Ivy League. Pick the place. They're going to be multi-generational, white and wealthy. And then once you comb that arena, you go international. But really, do you? We go Eastern Asian, and so we have white wealth domestically. We don't really have true international representation. We literally comb one part of one continent. And then at the end, we say, what about diversity? And not diversity socioeconomically, but usually racially, and usually toward our own utility. Where are our athletes? Where are our carefully curated scholars? You know the programs. And you curate in order to meet net tuition revenue, which is the cost of doing business. And by the way, the greatest cost on any 990, which is the tax return document for most of these institutions, are salaries. So you're not absconding to Tahiti, but you're just paying folks. In order to do business, you intentionally hardwire racial and socioeconomic polarization. You put it all together, and the best part is you're amazed when all of those kids don't play well in the sandbox together. In fact, the friction causes a fire, and then you look for the DEI fire extinguisher. So when we talk about value proposition, I fear that we rush to put DEI on trial when it really should be the cost of doing business, which is net tuition revenue, which has caused many institutions that can't afford to dip into its endowment. And frankly, if they could, it's not a good financial practice or strategy. We hardwire exclusion. We retrofit inclusion and cause this flummoxing through mental and intellectual gymnastics for practitioners and the work of DEI writ large. And we wonder why it doesn't work. Maybe because DEI in these spaces was DOA. We listen and we do judge.
That was beautifully said, Lawrence.
So, my question for both of you then is it because you're completely correct, Lawrence. Like, it was DOA. It, you know, when we had this conversation once before, my response was it never existed. And so, to come back to your question, Melina, what do we say to the people on the ground? The people that are there doing this work.
So, if anyone knows me like in real life, I am your burn it down girl. And I make no qualms about it. That is why I have Ginny and Lawrence as friends, because they're always like, no, that's not a good idea. But in seriousness, I think I'm going to use a metaphor that is not particularly beautiful. But if you diversify the slave masters. If you bring equity to slave beatings, if you bring inclusion to who you enslave and try to foster a sense of belonging on that plantation, is it or is it not still enslavement? It is, right? So to the people on the ground who I text every day, who my heart really goes out to, is you have to figure out whether you want to be in these spaces. You have to figure out whether or not you're in a safe space to be yourself. Are you being gaslit every time you go to work? Are you mentally and physically exhausted every single day? Does work not respect your boundaries? So I think first, because I know the majority of those people doing that work that we're talking about are Black and brown, right? So I always first want to center the human behind the work. I always go back to something Lawrence shared with me years and years and years ago, that if you are always the firefighter in the building, when do you have time to be the architect, to reimagine and redesign the systems that were created to keep us all enslaved on this plantation that we call an independent school or a university? And, you know, pick your poison. You know, universities were built with slave labor and independent schools were created and built so that they didn't have to mess with integration. So I don't even think I answered your question, but that was on my heart. I said what
well,
I said.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, I'll pick up my sister's ball there. I feel like because Melina is actually multilingual, I get to serve as a little bit of her subtitles for context. If you're listening and you feel like, boy, Melina, that is a lot of smoke directed at folks who may be doing good work, you have to understand the level of acrimony that internalized oppression has wrought. I remember being in New Hampshire, and Jenny will know this as sure as anyone else was. I moved to New Hampshire in 2016 from Long Island, and I came from New Jersey, and the singular, and shout to Melissa Lawler, because I know you'll be listening.
We love Melissa.
The two DEI practitioners who were in place, standing on their square, doing their work, were not Black and brown folks.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It was Jenny, and though she's my soul sister, she's not Black, and Melissa is the homie. She's not Black either, and they saved my sanity. They saved my sanity when I felt like I was marooned. They saved my sanity when I felt like we're 71 miles from the Canadian border. Surely Montreal would be better. Let's all get passports. And they were second to a spate of Black and brown folks that I reached out to who had the titles and the roles that I had. When I was reaching out, hey, is what's happening at my school similar to what's happening at your school? Or I admire what you do. Can we connect? There is this interesting internalized oppression, this practice of system beating, that when we feel like we've made it, even when we don't want it, we end up enacting the same oppression upon folks who look like us by people who don't look like us. So only is serving as Melina's cultural subtitles. Why all the smoke? Why all the shade? What I would take a turn in saying, in response to Jenny's question, what would you say to folks on the ground? Ask folks at your school, at your institution, if you get an opportunity with your board, you have audience with your head of school, please do me, the practitioner, a favor. Pick a struggle. Do you want me to soothsay or truthsay? Because for the longest, and I've done more than 40 retained searches at schools for directors of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and every name in that category under the sun, this drumbeat from search committees. We're looking for a disruptor. We're looking for someone to shake it up. We're, no, you're not. No, because I listen and I do judge. No, you are not. And then the foolhardy on my part, as well as the foolhardy on many prospective candidates' minds, I, singular person, am going to be the agent for change that this institution says they want. A lot of blood has been shed in the name of delusion. So if you're on the ground now, soothsay, truthsay. We're going into 2025. I'll sell whatever you want under one condition. Tell everybody what you want. But I can't carry your lies any further. And I think the level of delusion, the level of feeling traitorous to the job they signed up for, that's as challenging as the conditions that folks are in these spaces. Please do them a favor in 2025. Pick a struggle, soothsay or truthsay. Either way will work.
I really appreciate what you just named there, Lawrence, which is the truth say part. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot for folks on the ground is this paradox of tolerance that comes out of Karl Popper's work from the 1940s, an essay, The Open Societies and Its Enemies. And one of the things that I see so often in these schools is this paradox of tolerance, that we tolerate intolerance. And when we allow that to fester, right, what happens is that the intolerant become the power holders, they become the oppressors. And I've thought a lot about how this happens, particularly in schools. And there's this idea that schools are service, and that if we are in service, we are in service to all within the school. And that extends to constituents within the community. And to your point, truthsayer or soothsayer, are we just a business? Because we claim to have morals and values, it's in the strategic plan. And so, if that's true, then we have to make a decision about what we won't tolerate. And that's really scary for folks, right? But there's this humility and service of ego in independent schools. And the first time I encountered it, it felt like it was in an individual. But I'm starting to see it as a systemic thing. We are in service. We are humble because we serve. And there is an ego of institution that allows people to thrive in tolerance. Because we're good people, so we're not going to stand up to anything. Because we're a good school. And to Melina's, my favorite fire starter, it begs the question, right? And I see this happening at so many schools that we do things because we want to feel like we're good, not because we want to change, not because we're willing to be uncomfortable. And I think for me, one of the scariest things right now is the number of schools who are doing away with or not replacing directors and departments of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you know why we can do that? Because we care for everyone. We are going to accept everyone. It's like the dark side of inclusion. And don't get me wrong, as a prior director of equity and inclusion, the minute you have an equity and inclusion director, you're already failing. And it's a necessary step on the right path. And so when you choose to say, oh, we can all do this work, and there's no guiding factor to that, there's no truth sayer or group of truth sayers to which we turn to rather than away, then you are acknowledging yet again that it was DOA from day one.
Bars. What I think may be helpful in our own discipline on this beautiful multi-episodic journey is if we thought about a response to the DEI slowdown in this moment, Melina and Jenny, what would you say to schools, to organizations, to institutions that are seizing that pinhole of light and their intention is not to retreat, but they are interested in some hope, some inspiration, some guidance about a way forward, assuming that there are some folks staring through that pinhole of light. In the beautiful sagacity of the folks I have around this room, what would your message be about the way forward through the slowdown?
Recently, the president of Wesleyan University gave an interview to CNN, and it was grounded in the recent other universities coming out and saying we're never putting out statements anymore, right? And he said during his interview, he's like, I'm going to continue to put out statements. He was like, we are an institution of education. We have to remember who we are and not get so distracted by what is happening in terms of like the polarization, the shame, all of that. He's like, we educate here, right? And in the K through 12 space, right, I feel like we have a real responsibility to do that vis-a-vis joy. And, you know, I was recently listening to this podcast about the pedagogy of joy, and I think that in order to have joy, a few things have to be taken care of first. And within your, you know, community and with your students, if you are, if they feel safe, if they feel seen, if their curriculum reflects their not only them, you know, all of the mirror stuff and their current interests. Like where the world is going and how we need problem solvers and innovators and change makers. If you can impart the content via a joyous pedagogy, centering humans, children, for all that they are. You will have no choice but to include their race, their ethnicity, their familial status, where they come from. All of that is included in those things. It's not separate from, it's definitely a part of.
I feel like we're gonna switch places here, Melina, because I love so much of what you just said. And I do think that there is an immense power in joy. I would say challenge civil discourse. And I say that because challenging civil discourse, it's not like the type of gymnastics that Lawrence's child does that's outrageous. It's like the type of gymnastics from civil discourse to tolerating intolerance that I can do. Like, it's not even a cartwheel. Like, it's a direct line that when you're talking about civil discourse, what you're talking about is the moral negotiation of tolerating intolerance. And so I think for me, what I would say to people on the ground with this is that number one, I don't care what it feels like, you're not alone. And there you can reach out to any one of us, find your people, and then create this courageous accountability. And that's what I would say to leaders too. And I think this is one of the hardest things to do, courageous accountability. Because we hired an alum for the director of college counseling or the director of admissions. And we set strategic goals and they're not being met. So we come up with a work plan. We try something different. And I would say support your leaders in courageous accountability. Practice courageous accountability. If this truly matters, if we want to see a pedagogy of joy, if we want to move away from allowing intolerance to cause damage not only to our students, but to our colleagues and the families of our colleagues and the families of our students, then we have to mean it when we say accountability. Are we a school? Do we give you the chance to learn? Yes. But the reason you're seeing an exodus of DEI practitioners, people of color, and queer people from these spaces is because there is no courageous accountability. And we know that we are only tolerated at the same level as the intolerant. And so find your people, and particularly white folks, let your leaders know you are on board for courageous accountability.
What is courageous accountability, Jenny? What do you mean when you say that? Be
That,
specific.
you know what? You're gonna have to fire some people. And you're gonna have to say no to some applicants. You might even, get ready. I know Lawrence is gonna get his shoulder shake on this one. You might have to divest.
Oh, not divest.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And you might have to keep sending those letters. Right? But it's the hard decisions, right? It's having a board that is willing to make hard decisions. And so I think that's what's specific. It doesn't matter how good of a person you are, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have. If you are not disrupting, then you're only recreating.
I love it. I love it. Of the slowdown, I think there's some good news. For some of us, you're not experiencing the slowdown because you never started. So maybe in a fit of dereliction, you're at the beginning because you never got started. So you have nothing to undo. For others, because the problem was misstated or miscast, maybe we should mourn what needs to die. maybe DEI work or inclusion work or equity work or belonging work as you've done it has been miscast. Let it die. But in this moment, I think a sense of urgency has to appeal to folks for this reason. There are many of us, and I know it of Jenny's story, and I know it of mine specifically, though committed to the work of cultural competence and restorative practice and justice for historically marginalized folks, I didn't start coming into schools giving a care about DEI. My background was in college counseling. I know Jenny's was in English. I don't care about DEI. But I got really good at it. Oh, and it turns out that I'm a person of color, so a school benefited from the potpourri that is me, we, us. We got other things we can be doing. But some of your most bold, brilliant, and amazing folks that are currently in your community, we've got other stuff we can be doing, and you'll still be left holding this ball, not because of DEI, because of NTR and the cost of doing business. Final two things I say come from quotes from Black women, and I believe there's such power in enjoying them. One was a young Black alum at a school where I was doing a listening session back during the pandemic as the school was trying to find its way forward through its racial equity work. And she said to a screen full of board members and of senior leadership who were making promises to fix and address some of the issues that she raised, she said, "How can I trust the same people who broke it to fix it?" We got other stuff to do. Problem is, the streets don't believe that you can do it. So here you are, folks that broke it, trying to fix it. Two, Black woman told me back in college, and I'll never forget it. It still breaks my heart to this day. Doesn't mean it's not true. She says, "I'm not dissing you. I'm describing you." So if anything that you've heard sounds like a diss, it's a description. Not as an eternal state, but as a current state. Where is the sense of urgency to push through the slowdown? Because while institutions, organizations, and places of employment are slowing down, the world is not. And the one thing we all have in common is that we're depending on Generation Z, and they ain't having it. Enjoy your TikToks, friends.
And may I add the Listen to Black Women shirt.
Oh, right, can here. I add Lift Every Voice and Swing?
Yep. Lift Every Voice and Swing.
Love y'all. Y'all are amazing.
This is so fun. This was here are my final thoughts.
Okay, let me hear it.
So many people think that these conversations and this work is so scary.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to sit in and listen to three people who love each other have this conversation. Are we practitioners? Yes. But this is an invitation for you to join us, to be a part of the conversation. Because when we love each other, this is what we do. And we said a lot of words. But most importantly, I hope you felt in this moment like you got to sit in with our family. And our family's not afraid to talk. And so we can't wait to welcome you back for next time. And with that, third rail, off the rail.
I love it. I love it. Yes, join us next time as we dig deep and talk about what needs to change in innovative approaches for transformative work, not performative, rather. transformative work. Thanks, y'all. Peace.
Love.